You may recall some number of weeks ago, President Trump quipped that maybe Russia's just a paper tiger. Okay. I guess if you think that Russia's a paper tiger, then you can say, yeah, we'll just do whatever you want. Well, here's some of the reason why the Western Europeans think that they are a paper tiger. Here's NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte mocking the Russian military.
What is your estimation on how much the Russians might need this to end?
Russians have gained 1% of Ukrainian territory so far this year, so this is a few yards a day. We all know now the name of this famous city, Pokrovsk. They started 18 months ago to grab that city, and they still have not fully succeeded in doing so. And indeed, they are losing 20,000 men a month, the same amount as the Soviet lost in 10 years in Afghanistan. And then Putin having to increase now his taxes. You only do that if there is absolutely no alternative left. So him doing this means that they are not in a good place. But in the end, we cannot wait him out.
Okay, more of this doublespeak. And that means that Putin is not in a good place, but we can't wait him out. Well, hang on. If he's not in a good, place, you can wait him out. But if he is in a good place, you can't wait him out. And he mentions Pokrovsk. Let me show you this real quick. This is today. You see that every time I show this, it gets less and less yellow. You see now Mirnograd is hardly any of it is under full control of the Ukraine side. The red continues to expand, and the gray tone continues to expand all around it. There's hardly anything left here. Yes, it has taken 18 months, but how many Ukrainian military personnel have died in defense of this? You see, we keep talking to this over and over. The Russian objective is not territorial acquisition per se. That's a byproduct of what their actual objective is, which is the destruction of the Ukrainian armed forces. And you see there that now, because of all of the Ukrainians who have died in the process here, with all of the priority on firepower from the Russian side so that the Russians minimize the loss of their troops and maximize the loss of the Ukrainian troops. Whether it took 18 months or 18 weeks, it doesn't make any difference. Ultimately, you lost it, just like you did with Severodonetsk, with Lysychansk, with Mariupol, with Bakhmut, with Avdiivka, with the incursion into Kursk, with the Khrinky attack down on the Dnipro. You see what I'm saying here? Every time you want to look at any of these battlefields, you keep getting over and over that the Russian military destroys the Ukrainian military. They destroyed them on the Dnipro. They destroyed them in the Kursk operation. They destroyed them in Bakhmut. Do you see the pattern here? And they are destroying them in the Kupiansk area up in the north and in Pokrovsk there I just showed you. Common theme over and over is the destruction of them. The West somehow, I don't know, maybe they think Russia's a paper tiger, or maybe they're just oblivious to the realities of the combat ground, and they think that their capabilities are more. Well, as it turns out, let's see, the only way out of this conflict is for Russia to leave Ukraine. That's the way out of this conflict, this former Finland prime minister. Yeah, so you see, I mean, that's the kind of the dystopian view. That all of those things I just showed you, folks, those are all Russian battlefield victories. How many Ukrainian battlefield victories can I give you? You can go back to 2022 in Kursk, in the Kharkiv area, sorry, and in the Kherson area. And those are the only two battlefield victories you have. Since 2022, there have been this many. There have been none. And yet, you want to sit there and confidently say in your really nice little white suit there, yep, the only path is the Ukraine military victory and Russia leaving and going home. So what you're saying is you are condemning Ukraine to continue fighting a war it cannot win until there literally is no one left to fight it. I mean, this claim that you'll fight to the last Ukrainian is on full display right there and on what Mark Rutte has said there. So they want to continue going on. Well, part of the additional problem from the Western side is this gross misunderstanding of the nature of warfare today. There was an article, it was about a week or so ago, in a Ukrainian publication. It was the BBC News from Ukraine. This is translated into English. But this says NATO manuals no longer work. why Ukrainian military was not trained to fight with drones at Polish training grounds. What this talks about here, and I think we have this, well, no, they don't have this. This was referred to in an art in a video by our friend Alex History Legends, and he discusses some of the realities of this. This is hard to believe. I think we have the full video of his, and I strongly recommend you go into the description there. You can read it later. Watch the whole thing later, but here is one evidence, and this is shocking. I'm just going to set this up. This is nearly 4 years into war. This is from Western NATO troops, Poland and Czech, I believe, that were training Ukrainian folks last month at a new Czech training ground. Watch this.
They were surprised by scenarios where an APC crosses a river. They told instructors directly that any equipment will be destroyed by drones before it even approaches the shore. Then came the Czechs. During one of those exercises, Czech paratroopers had to storm Ukrainian positions. So you have Czech troops playing Team Red. They were commanded by an instructor called Yakub, a veteran from Afghanistan, while the Ukrainian Team Blue was preparing for the defense. The exercise starts. Czech troops leave the assembly area. I believe they formed attack columns and then advanced towards Ukrainian positions. Meanwhile, the Ukrainians simply launched their Mavic drones. Then the article says that after the first attempt, instructor Yakub stopped the scenario and asked, "Can we take out the Mavics?" Ukrainian commander 18 asked why. The Czech commander Yakub replied, "You find us too fast with your Mavics, and we can't get to you. You detect us on the approach to your positions." Wow.
That all I can say is wow, too. That is, let me just underscore this. As someone who has fought in four combat deployments to include tank-on-tank warfare, I'm just stunned beyond belief. Now, I thought that because of the 2020 Armenia-Azerbaijan war, where a lot of drones were used that just crushed the armor, I thought, man, warfare has changed forever. Especially when it looked like there was going to be war between Russia and Ukraine, I thought, man, the Russians, especially with their relationship with Azerbaijan and their proximity there, would definitely have watched this, and they're probably going to be all over this. They probably were going to be ready for this drone warfare from the beginning because they have so many more assets. Turns out I was wrong. Turns out that I gave Russia too much credit. They weren't ready. Neither was the Ukraine side. In fact, neither one of them were at the beginning. Now, they changed that pretty quickly, and in fact, the Ukraine side adopted more quickly, but they proved why that should have happened before the first round was fired, and then they figured it out pretty quickly. Now, you can wag a finger a bit at both of those two sides for like going, how could y'all have missed that? I mean, it was self-evident that that's where it was going, and to have not prepared ahead of time, it's kind of embarrassing for both of you, but especially the Russian side, in my view. But what can we say about our side, folks, when nearly 4 years into this war, more than 5 years, close to six now, on the other side of the Armenia-Azerbaijan war, we're still conducting training exercises that we don't have drones even in. And now that we're trying to train these guys on the Ukraine side, and the article stipulates that only a handful of them actually had combat experience. The rest of them were new recruits that they were trying to train. But there were some combat experienced guys there, which is the reason why they were like going, well, obviously, we're going to use drones. I mean, that's a normal part of every single operation in the Russia-Ukraine war. And the so-called trainers, the guys who were supposed to be training the new people, didn't have any plan to even incorporate drones to the point to where, hang on, this is not working out because of the adjudication. Our troops are all being killed before they even get to the line of contact at the river. So you got to take them out. Otherwise, there's not going to be any training. And the other side is going, you realize, of course, that in real life, you would never get to the line of contact. You would never get to the river line. So there wouldn't be an engagement because you'd be dead long before you got here. That's how it works on both sides of the line every single day. And we seem to be oblivious to that. We seem to not realize that. And just consider, if we're training them like that, what do you think we're doing to our own troops? What do our own training exercises look like? Now, the United States has at least publicly said that we're buying millions of drones, that we're incorporating them in. So maybe we're doing more on that. But I wager strongly, based on my experience of having been in the U.S. Army for two full decades, after having seen how we do with acquisition and how we are so slow to actually adopt changes, and we are so loath at the leader level to do anything different than we did in the past, things that worked really well, like we want to do what we did in Desert Storm or Operation Enduring Freedom and back going to Baghdad with tanks in 2003. We want to just do it a little bit better. We want to do the same thing, things we did. And you recall earlier this summer, I mocked the U.S. because we came out with this new armored training manual at the armored platoon level. And the Ukrainian military mocked it first, which is where I even heard about it, because they said these battle drills you're using here are laughable. They would never work in this drone environment. So even though we at least the U.S. Army gave some kind of nod to the presence of drones, we didn't understand their true power and how hard it is to operate, especially in a mechanized operation. But now here our NATO allies apparently know even less, to the point to where they're not even using it in their training scenarios. And if they're not using it for Ukraine folks, it seems pretty unlikely that they're using it for their own troops here. These are the people upon who you want to base the security of Europe. So apparently the Europeans are dysfunctional at the political level. They're dysfunctional at the diplomatic level, that's for sure. But it now also appears that they're dysfunctional at the tactical level. And obviously I've been talking about for a long time, allegedly it was an American general that was significantly part of the planning for the disastrously failed Ukrainian offensive in 2023. The one that should have ended the war, because it exposed that the Ukraine side was never going to be able to recover from that, and that they couldn't, even with all the preparation, defeat the Russian lines. But it didn't. We still did not recognize that. We have French generals that are saying, yeah, we got to get ready for a war. We have German generals, of course, saying that we have to get ready for war, obviously in the Baltics, Poland, all of them. But now Poland and Czech, apparently, according to that article anyway, by Ukrainians, reported by the BBC, is that we don't even know how to conduct modern warfare, even after 4 years. If I had condemnation on both the Russian and Ukraine militaries for not being ready from the Armenia-Azerbaijan war, how much more guilt should we heap upon our leaders that after that war and 4 years of this one, we're still not ready? We're still not incorporating the lessons that are on display every single day, which we give verbal assent to. We claim that we understand it. We say we observe it. And yet when you see it's not translating into the actual operations, that exercise that was described in that paper should 100% have used incorporated drones on both the offensive and the defensive forces. That should have been a literal scripted in part of it, that no one should have even thought of starting it without understanding that both of those would be present. And instead, they wanted none of them present. They apparently didn't have any on the offensive side, and they didn't want the defense side to have it. Otherwise, we couldn't do the exercise. That is wow, to quote Alex in History Lesson. So how do we think this is going to work out? Because you know who's not saying wow? Who's not being unwilling to acknowledge failures and then make changes? It's the Russian side. We see on the battlefield that they're doing whatever it takes to succeed, and that they're doing things that, based on the new technologies of war and on the adjusting doctrine that they're employing, that they're saying we're going to minimize the risk to our troops, because there's no more of these so-called meat waves, if there ever were any, but now they're definitely not, because they're prioritizing firepower because of their defense industrial base and the decisions that they made years ago put into effect. Now then they are preserving their own troops. They're minimizing the risk while maximizing the threat to the other side with drones of multiple calibers, electronic warfare, glide bombs, long-range drones, new technology in glide bombs, etc. And, of course, the artillery continues. Also, there's been advancements technologically in the artillery. So the Russians have never stopped. They never sit still. They're continuing to expand both their capability and their technology. Some things, they never stopped. They still haven't stopped. The Ukraine side can never catch up. And instead of recognizing these painfully bloody obvious truths on the battlefield, we just continue to say, nope, we're going to set the conditions, we meaning in this case Europe and Ukraine, We're going to set the conditions. To don't care what the Russians say. I don't even care what the Americans say. And apparently the American president is like a person watching from the audience. He's in the bleachers. I don't know. I believe it when I see it. That's not something he's supposed to be able to say. But you see an absent landlord, so to speak. Definitely not a leader exerting power. It's certainly not one who understands the dynamics. And then you have these on the European side and the Ukraine side that just don't care what the reality is. They are going to go for it and just hold to a verbal hope of what they want, oblivious and ignoring the reality. Whereas on the Russian side, they still say we prefer a diplomatic outcome, but we are in prepared, we are trained, we are equipped, and we are supplied with everything we need to extract it on the battlefield with no negotiations, with no submissions. We're not going to concede anything because we don't have to. We'll only have a negotiated settlement where we don't take everything we want if you're willing to, because then that's the only way that there is any benefit for Russia to negotiate, is if they can get their main tasks without shedding any more blood to get it. But they're not going to sacrifice their core issues, which is the root causes of the war, which is what Putin said there in June 2024. If they don't get those, then they're simply going to take them. They would be foolish, and they recognize this, and the Russian people recognize this. They would literally be foolish to give into any version of what the Europeans and the Ukrainians are saying today when they have the power to compel compliance on their terms. It would be foolish. I don't think it's ever happened in the history of humanity, and I've studied warfare a lot. And I mean, looking back centuries, I've never seen anything to where the side that had the power to compel compliance chose not to. And it's not going to happen here either, folks. So what you're seeing from this Zelensky statement, and by the way, I've seen lots of people going back to his comment there about how brave he was about giving that statement. That's only, people can only say that when they don't understand what's going on, when they're not aware of the combat realities. And for civilians, I can understand that, because we're so focused on images and visuals, and especially well-made videos. And Zelensky is brilliant at that, always has been. And when that's all they see, they think, wow, that sounds really motivated, really, really inspiring. What a great leader. It's only a great leader if you have no idea what's going on. And if you keep going on with that great video and great images, all you're going to do is add to the body count for the Ukraine side, and you will just add to the ultimate cost of the failure. The failure is already known. They have lost the war. It's over already. The end is determined. We know the end is coming, and the Ukraine side lost. The only outstanding information that we don't have is, what will the final toll be? What will the final tally be? How many bodies will be lost? How much territory will be lost? How many cities will be destroyed, et cetera? That's the only part we don't know yet. And, of course, the other wild card is, will this war expand beyond the borders of Ukraine? Will we get sucked into the war, whether we being NATO or Europe or the United States? That's the only part that's still unknown. And I pray to God that even delusionary leaders like we have are not suicidal as well, that would start a war that could all too easily go nuclear and expand it to direct conflict with Russia. Hopefully they'll just, I don't know, try to spin the loss. At this point, that's the least bad option of a loss. Spin the loss, but don't get us into a conflict as well. So we'll have to wait and see how that's going to happen. But you need to understand, that's the reality, folks, today. Whatever you're hearing is going to come out from the rest of this meeting at Geneva, whatever Rubio may say next, because obviously everything he said yesterday has almost been sabotaged already by our so-called allies in Europe and Ukraine. We'll see how it's going to work out. And I guess, like President Trump, I'll believe it when I see it if something good happens. But we are unintimidated and uncompromised to bring you the truth, and you need to know it on all sides here, and we're going to continue to do that, because you deserve it, and we will continue to give it to you. Thanks very much, folks. We're going to have Andrei Mardianov, who's going to look at some additional issues that we have today that we haven't discussed here on this. He's going to give us some more depth, and especially on what the Russians are thinking. A lot of this, we focused today mostly on the United States and the European and Ukraine side. He's going to give us this deeper intellectual understanding on the Russian side later this afternoon, 2 p.m. on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. We'll see you then.